welcome to the Lately in JavaScript podcast. This is episode 29, and as always, I have here. A different person. It's a beard man. Is that you, Michael?
Who's that sexy guy at my window? Oh, that's me. Hello. Yes, I am. This is T-minus 1 days, and this is going away. So,
Michael's Kimsel spring fashion.
Yes.
How are you doing, Mike?
As I told you before the show, tired, very, very tired. Had a hell of a week, much like I had a week in January and a week in February. Had 1 week at the end of March, which was extremely overworked. But other than that, I'm thinner. I think I shared my time before, my jogging. And, yeah. I don't have it up right now to share, but 31 and 20-something seconds minutes. That's for my 5K, 3.1 miles. It's my best time yet.
5K, okay. What is that, kilometers or miles?
Yeah, 5 kilometers, which is 3.1 miles. So.
Yeah, well, I don't run. I have no idea. It's probably good. And I just swim, and I'm much slower.
I'll tell you, it's not that good. Because when I first started doing this back in December, I binged for what's a good 5K runtime. And I had people saying, well, you know, reading posts, well, I just had my hip replaced, so I'm only doing 29 minutes. Or, this is insane. But when I started, I was doing about 37 or 38 minutes. And the last few weeks, I got down to 34, then 32, and then I did 31. So I'd like to I'd like to get to 30, 29 or 30 minutes at some point.
Okay, but now back to the actual JavaScript podcast.
There you go.
Hangout.
I think about JavaScript code while I'm running.
Yeah.
There's the tie-in right there.
Yeah. Oh, okay. That's on topic.
There you go.
Well, this month we have several planned topics to talk about, mostly about libraries or something related with them. And we're going to start with one related I think it's a new HTML tag. Let me screen share it here. Okay.
Share that screen.
I try because it's always a challenge. The greatest challenge is sharing the right screen on Google Hangouts. Okay, can you see it now?
I see it.
Control plus. Okay. Well, let me see if you are seeing what I think you see.
I'm seeing the template tag.
Yeah, and that I was just annoyed with this ask toolbar that got infiltrated in this browser setup. I don't know how, because I cannot disable it. Anyway, back to the actual topic here. There is a new HTML5 tag named template, and I have another challenge here because the Windows is not resizing my Windows correctly. So I have an hard time scrolling because they do not appear with a scroll bar. Okay, now I think it's all... Is it all visible?
Some of it.
I don't know.
Scroll because over to the...
I do not see a horizontal scroll bar for some reason.
Bastards. That's how they get you.
It's this. I bet this is this ask toolbar thing. Damn you, ask! Nobody's going to use you.
Did you upgrade Java by any chance?
Oh, maybe that was the problem. I don't know. This is not really my machine. It's a Windows machine. I don't use my Windows. Anyway, I was trying to show this template.
A new template. Yeah, tag coming from the W3C.
Yeah, well, when it comes from the W3C, it usually comes late in the game, meaning we could use this several years ago. Why now? Now it's all backwards incompatible because we don't have it in older browsers. Well, anyway, one interesting thing that I found about this template is somehow it addresses a need. Sometimes you need to have a certain HTML that you need in the page, but not necessarily visible at when the page loads. I don't know if you had a similar need, but for instance, I have actually implemented a JavaScript component that delays the load of of ads and other slow components on the page that rely on external JavaScript. And the way I make the HTML appear on the page is precisely having to insert JavaScript strings with HTML escaped, so it is not confused with the real content on the page that loads initially. And this template tag seems to address that need. Too bad it is not available on all browsers since HTML4, so we could rely on it nowadays. Anyway, there is hope, and with this new HTML5 template tag, when HTML5 gets widely available on all browsers, I'll be able to use this in my component instead of having to escape all the HTML in JavaScript. Michael, do you see any use for this template tag? Or,
well, I do. The article makes some pretty good examples of why you might want to use that. And some of the template techniques right now, I mean, you talked about pulling in extra stuff, but if you deliver a page that has some of your template strings built in, they're either strings or they could be part of the DOM. But if they're part of the DOM and you have things like image tags, they'll either break or they'll be trying to load up an image by default. They're going to send those network requests.
Yeah.
Whereas things that are inside this, it looks like the spec for this template tag is that they would be inert, or I think that's the word they use. They would be not active.
Right.
That's probably the biggest benefit I see here, is that there's a defined way of saying this is part of the DOM, but don't do anything with it. It's only there for scripts to manipulate. It's not there for the browser to render directly. So having a semantic way of doing that is nice, instead of making it into strings in JavaScript or making it into trying to put it in comments and parse it out or any other technique like that.
Yeah, that is interesting, as I said, but unfortunately, since we still have to wait for this to become widely available in browsers, for now it's just an hope that this becomes more standardized, and we see how it goes.
In some ways, I sort of wish there was a more generic tag that had a similar effect. Instead of explicitly calling it template, just call it something like inert or null or something, so that you could deliver DOM chunks down which would not be parsed, or I should say rendered, by the browser engine. They would still be available in the DOM tree directly for manipulation, but not and then you could have, like, I don't know, if I say inert, you could have a type attribute on there, so the type could be template, or the type could be CSV data, or, I mean, it's not CSV, but user data or something like that. So we can have structured data that we push down in the DOM, as opposed to having to always put it in JavaScript.
Yeah, well, I hope this becomes adopted very quickly, because I see some uses for it. And now, moving on to the next topic that we have planned, I'm going to talk about, well, let me screen share it first, about an article that talks about a sort of a combination of a libraries that I found it useful. It is basically a way to render PDF documents on the server side using Node.js and Node Canvas. Well, I knew PDF.js, but I was not aware of this Node Canvas. I confess I haven't been using Node at all. And this is interesting because of that possibility. And I don't know, Michael, if you have tried this and if you found it feasible. How good is it, PDF.js, to render documents? Does it fully support all PDF specs, or maybe not?
Do not know. I know there was some movement last year. This PDFJS is not terribly new. I think it's been around for a while, and there was some movement to build it into, it was going to be built into, I don't know, Firefox or something. That was some rumors or rumblings that I'd heard or read someplace. To the extent that anybody would even consider that, it seems like it would have to be pretty full-featured, and you know, maybe there's a couple things that it doesn't support, but it's going to support quite a lot of things for most people. The interesting thing here, from what I remember reading in general, is that the I might be confusing this with the rendering lot rather than the creation library. This was a renderer, but it was. It seemed to be somewhat faster than having to load up the Adobe Reader. I'm getting off topic here now, so some short answers. Yeah. I haven't tried this PDFJS specifically.
Well, here in the article that I'm showing, it just says it's not particularly fast, but as long as it does it Java branding the PDFs in images, I think it's already useful. And,
yeah.
At least. Well, there are solutions to do that, but there are external programs like these mentioned in the article, like MUPDF and XPDF. I think it's interesting to have this integrated in JavaScript, even if it is on the server side. Actually, sometimes it's more useful when it is on the server side. And other than that, the guy complains about the fonts that do not look very well on the Mac. I think he means Mac on the server side. Well, for the web, I don't know if there are many people using Macs on the server side. Probably not even Apple.
Not enough. Let's put it that way. Not enough. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think Apple uses Macs on the server side?
I think they do for some stuff, but
for some, not all.
Probably not for all, but they don't use anything for all. There you go.
Right. Well, now moving on with the next topic, which is about SVG.js library. Let me screen share it here again. Well, this is somehow similar library to the one that you mentioned before, PDF.js, but for creating SVG-based graphics on the browser, I think. I don't know if it's possible to somehow save the generated SVG to a file. Well, anyway, if you can save it can add it to a document, I suppose you can somehow capture the HTML to make this appear on a page and use it separately. Which probably is interesting. What I found interesting about this library is that not only it can render some graphics, vectorial graphics, but you can also add some animation effects.
Yeah.
This is the demo page, and at the end there are some animations that you can do with this. And this may be interesting to present on a page on which you want to show something more animated. Lately, I've been working with an animation library that I developed that would do somehow similar effects, but using canvas. But the canvas itself, the graphics on the canvas would be drawn dynamically. I don't know. I think this requires some JavaScript to animate the graphics. Michael, do you have any experience with SVG?
Very little. I have noticed there's a couple of charting libraries that I've looked at in the last month or so, and the majority of modern ones tend to draw everything in SVG. I think we're to the point now where you can assume that somebody's browser probably will support SVG. At least in situations where you're trying to deliver a particular value, intranets and things like that. But I have not done anything specific with it myself.
Yeah. What about Canvas? Have you used Canvas for?
Again, not graphics, but I don't remember the name of it. But I did use a charting library a couple of years ago that ended up it drew stuff to Canvas. But, I mean, there was nothing wrong with it. It's just I haven't had any call to do anything myself directly. And the few times that I do, I go out looking for somebody else's stuff. Almost everything I've needed to draw in the last couple of years have been people want bar charts. They want data visualization, at least with people I work with. So.
Right, nothing animated.
No.
Or mostly
statural. No, how is that? Oh, is that? Sorry, that was animated. If I have to explain it, it's not funny. But so there's a little bit of a language barrier going on there.
Well, animation is more to sometimes give some emphasis. I saw some charting libraries for JavaScript that not only show the actual bars or pies or whatever, but they also animate the presentation. They show the bars growing up to the current level. It's just a minor enhancement, and not really important, but it may help giving a good look to your charts. Well, anyway, this SVG library can also somehow be used for this purpose. I just don't know about the compatibility. I think at least in the older IE versions, it probably not work. I'm not sure. I don't think it provides any compatibility with VML or something, whatever is that called in on IE.
Don't know.
Well, anyway, moving on with the next topic on the podcast, we are going now to talk about an interesting library, or maybe it is a service. I don't know. I didn't actually download this. I just tried it on a page. I better share the page here. It's called Slowmo.js.
I like it.
Yeah, I imagine you like these names. The idea here is to, it's probably too small, let me increase the font. The idea here is to show the execution of JavaScript code in several segments. And here you can, it shows several frames with the code being executed. First, the evaluation here of this for loop of the initialization of this library, then the comparison of the loop, and then it goes through the loop itself, and all the expressions are computed. And this may be helpful to not only to teach how JavaScript is executed, but also maybe for some debugging when you are in doubt what code would execute next when you are in, you have a certain code segment that you want to analyze. And this may be interesting. Michael, did you try this? What are your impressions about this?
I played with it a little bit just in the demo screen there. It's an interesting idea, and my first thought was, you know, it's neat to see still frames, but seeing it animated would be neat too. And then you actually go to the GitHub page, and the author said, I originally wanted to make this into a set of movies or a movie file, but I thought that he explained some of his reasonings for not doing that. And it makes sense. And I'm sure somebody could fork it and also add a output movies instead of just static frames. But having both would be, I think, fun, but this gives you the raw building blocks, certainly.
Yeah, it's probably not much more work because it generates HTML to present this code, so maybe just could switch each frame one at a time, and it will give the animation effect that you are suggesting. And well, anyway, I think it is still innovative and interesting. I've never seen anything exactly like this. What I have seen are some services like the one that we're going to talk about next. We're going to talk about a site named Runnable. Now, let me screen share again here. And it basically, it's similar to some other sites that exist that allow you to see code executing on a page and see the results of this. Let's say, it's probably could use some font increase. Well, you can paste some code here on this text editor and then run it, and you can see the results on the left. It's not exactly this temporary error. It's in this case, it's just an error and a hello world message being outputted by a server created with Node.js. Well, there are several sites for this. I'm trying to remember their names. But the difference is that this one is that it also makes it possible to run code on the server side. I did not look exactly how it does this. I suppose you have to install something on some server. Or maybe they provide their own server to try this code, I suppose. Michael, did you try this?
Well, I've just gone through and click the run, click the demo, click the run. It's interesting, but what's I always want to go off topic a bit, but what this jogged in my mind was JavaScript is built into browsers, and yet we don't have, much like we don't have any HTML editing tools, we don't have any JavaScript editing tools. We don't need a lot. I mean, it would be nice to have more. We have plugins like Firebug and so on, but therefore viewing and manipulating stuff that already exists. Why do we not have a standard thing in browsers to let you just do this? Why does this have to be a separate web service altogether? It's just kind of strange that this is a... I understand the word browser means it really should just be browsing. That's all it was meant to do 20 years ago or 19 years ago. But we're a little past that now. And I'm wondering if we'll ever get to the point where there will be enough in a browser where you can just go and type some code. The idea of learning code, a lot of people will say, well, learn JavaScript because it's everywhere. It's everywhere except there's nowhere to edit it, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, you want to do it all in the browser without relying on a server to test JavaScript
or some
code.
Or some third-party service. I can see some attraction to some of what they're doing, but there would just be value to just say something like if you pressed a button, if you had like in Chrome, if you like Chrome:// edit or something like that, or some mode that was just in there so you could do quick, I want to type up some stuff. To me, that would be, it would open up programming to a whole other level of people that don't, they're not dumb. It's not like they don't understand this stuff, but they don't have the facilities to do a lot more. Excel is a prime example. People do way too much stuff in Excel, but it's because it's completely self-contained. They have an editor. They can do VBA macros. They have a whole lot of stuff. They don't need to put a page up that then has code in it and then put it on a server and configure that server and then configure a host name and then go load it to have it come right back down to their browser where they can see the results. Again, I'm getting a little off topic, but it kind of has my wheels turning. Are we ever going to get to that point?
Right. I agree with you. Basically, this service is very similar to JS Fiddle and the likes, others that exist for similar purposes. The only thing that I've noticed it goes a bit further is, for instance, the part of Node.js. It relies on a server to run and test that code. So I think they provide the server side for that purpose. But there are other things that, for instance, Twitter and Google libraries that you can use from JavaScript and you could test directly on your browser without having some third-party service to provide you that service. Maybe it could be a browser extension for that purpose, if the browser does not come with that facility built in, as you suggest. Well, somehow I think debuggers provide a console that let you do it a bit, because it's not very user-friendly.
You're doing one line at a time. They're explicitly meant to debug existing code that you've written and deployed someplace else, as opposed to actually doing your creation in the browser as well, too.
Well, in the worst case, one of these days you develop that extension for the browser.
Yeah. When I have less than 200 hours a week of work to do, so.
That is the life of a slave. You are a slave of your customers.
Yes.
And well, now on the bright side of life, we are
There's
going
a bright
to.
side. There you go.
Yeah, there's even a song. Always look on the bright side of life.
Are you going to sing it?
No,
no,
not me.
Thank
But I imagine if Arthur Sossin was here, he would want all of us to sing it and whistle. And,
yeah, like Gangnam style. Yeah.
And Harlem Shake and those things.
Yeah.
Well, maybe next month, if it is not already
maybe
gone out of fashion. Well, anyway, as I was saying, let's move on to the next topic. This time, it's an interesting initiative about an implementation of Git tools for JavaScript. It's interesting because I've seen implementations of Git clients.
Hang on. This guy's talking pretty much about exactly what I was talking about. Today, there are fewer and fewer kids getting into programming because consumer devices are locked down and don't come with a way to program them. Everybody has a browser, multiple browsers. No browsers give you a way to program them.
That's true. I have
directly.
Not noticed
yeah.
that detail.
And he's looking at it from the idea of getting kids involved because he got a Commodore 64 when he was a kid and that got him into programming. And I come from a similar background, but I think it's important to get kids involved in programming. I think it's becoming a bit of a lost art at a kid stage. But there's to me, there's a lot more value that could be unlocked by allowing people to directly program JavaScript in their browsers. Again, the comparison with Excel and what people, the abuse that people heap on Excel via VBA. But carry on with JS Git, because this looks pretty interesting.
Yeah, well, I have not noticed that detail of running Git all from a browser, including Git. I'm not sure what it would be the use case of using Git from a browser. Maybe to use it as a development language. And
well, there are or there have been some of the other, like the Cloud9, for one, the editors,
yeah.
The idea of web-based editors. Well, if you could integrate Git in that, assuming that it's not necessarily meant to be run in a browser. He's just saying JavaScript. Now, it could just be that this is meant for server-side JavaScript, Rhino script and Node script or Node.js, things like that.
Yeah. Well, but in that case, I suppose you would be able to check out a code to your local machine, right?
Aha, Cloud9. Oh, see, I wasn't even seeing your screen up there. He mentions Cloud9. Anyway, there probably will be a number of things that can open up if and when you have this.
So it's probably not to check out code to your machine, but check out code to other
machines.
Well,
FAQ, where will you store the files? Now, it looks like he's actually meaning browser-based, because where we store the files, browsers have several new APIs for storing local offline blobs. I'll use the new file API or IndexedDB. There you go.
Yeah, well, that could be it. Although, well, I'm not sure how it is these days, but I think there is a limit of size of files you can store in local storage.
And that limit will change at some point, and then JS Git will be ahead of the curve.
Well, we have to wait and see, because I'm not sure why there is that limit. I think it's a limit per application, so it's tied to something on the server side. Well, I don't know. Well, anyway, this is for now. It's a proposal of a project that appeared on Kickstarter, and it pledged to $12,000, and I almost got $20,000 so far. So it was a successful project, I think. I'm just not sure what is the state of the project. If it was already started, or was waiting for the funding. Actually, I confess I'm not even aware what exactly is the funding for.
To give him time to work on it, I bet, or to reward his effort and probably to ensure that it's open source something.
Yeah.
I'm guessing that he probably wanted to work on it anyway, but may have done something else with his time or not.
Yeah. Oh, fix bugs for his customers that take too many hours. And you would rather do work on this library than putting
there
up
you go.
with a...
There you go. As you know, Kickstarter's all or nothing. The minimum I put in was the absolute minimum I needed to know I would be able to have something useful done before I had to go back to consulting work. I'll use the extra funds over the minimum to continue to improve the project. This means I have more time for things like graphical diff utility, creating branches offline with GUI tags, blah, 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 blah. So... Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Well, it's great. I find this interesting of initiatives that appear on Kickstarter, and they seem to get the sympathy of many people that actually get the money faster than probably if the projects would be backed by investors or something like that.
Yeah. Well, most investors aren't going to deal with $20,000 or $30,000. So.
Well, not in this case, but I've seen projects being raising millions in Kickstarter. What was it? I think it was one of those smartwatches.
Yeah. The watch was a big one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Pebble.
Yes, exactly, Pavel. I just seen about it yesterday, and it's an alternative way of raising money, and it seems to be working well. Well, good luck for Tim Caswell. Maybe you can call him someday to talk about this project in a future show.
Yeah.
Well, Tim, if you are listening to this, maybe if you are interested, you can get back to you and talk about this project. Well, anyway, moving on to the next topic.
This was on my list of things to talk about.
Well. Yeah.
But you no. I'm saying this IntroJS. I'd come across this a couple weeks ago and was getting ready to send it to you, and then you already sent it to me. So there you go.
Yeah, that's because important things are being recognized as important. This IntroJS project, I found it very simple and very very effective. What it does is to show step by step what a certain site has to offer and how you can use it. For instance, you click here on the show me, and it starts telling you about each part of the user interface and say this is this initial message is a bit dummy, just saying this is a project called IntroJS, and then you click next and it focuses on other parts of the... Well, I don't know if this works well. Okay, I think there are some issues when the scroll bar is not at the top. Anyway, then it shows the next step on a page. It shows a number here, and it highlights a certain part, a certain element on a page, just to show you what it what is the next step.
Yep.
And then you continue.
And the keyboard works, so you can just hit right arrow and left arrow to go forward and back.
And this is really simple and very effective. I've seen something similar on certain sites, I did not see a standalone library for this purpose. And it's really simple and elegant, I think. And let me just go ahead through the end. And at the end, I thought it would do something different, but okay, it didn't.
That's not that exciting.
Oh, there is no boss monster at the end of the level.
No, you could fork it and add one in if you want.
Yeah. Well, I think the concept itself is very simple. It would not be hard to adapt it. I'm not sure if you really need a standalone library just for this purpose. But I've seen it in several sites. What is it? I think it was in Google AdSense. They're trying to demo new things in the user interface. And they sort of show something like this. Not exactly with this... animation of the areas that fade from one to the other, but the concept is similar, and I think this is very useful to adopt in your site. And I don't know, Michael, did you like this, or do you think you will be implementing it on any of your projects to make it them more useful, easier to learn for the users?
I've got one that I might be introducing it into sometime in the next couple of months. But I had met with a local team here in the town a couple weeks ago, and I showed this to them because they were they have an interesting UI problem. It's a kind of a rich UI they've built, but they don't have a good way of demonstrating that or showing that to a bunch of people or showing instructions, I guess is what I'm trying to get at. And I suggested that this Intro.js or a variation on it would be an easy way to guide people through. Basically, click here for a guided tour and go over the six or seven parts of the application without having to take you to another page, without having to have a PDF with screenshots. You know, this would be fairly interactive and keep you right on the page. So I don't think they've implemented it yet, but it's kind of on their to-do list of stuff to review.
Yeah, but I think in general it's a very good idea because it helps a user to learn about it. User interfaces sometimes are a bit complex and they might get lost with all the buttons. Somehow, yep. I talk a bit about guiding the user. I'm not sure if it was two or three shows ago, about a library that I developed that did some animations, and the animations would be used to give emphasis to certain elements on the page, like when we have several pieces of information, and you want the user to focus on the next step, and you could... it just made appear a circle around the message that the user needs to pay attention next. And this is a bit different, but it somehow has a similar purpose, which is to guide the user. And I think it's a great idea. Well, moving now to the next topic. Michael, I think you wanted to talk about... A real-time ray tracing library, right?
Well, we can. I'll try to make this brief because it really was just something I saw a couple hours ago. So let me bring this up. And, whoops, I just lost my place. Let me do that. And then let me do a screen share. Share your screen. Where did it go? There we go. So hopefully you can see this. The title caught my attention because 22 years ago, I was interested in ray tracing on the Commodore, or not on the Commodore Amiga. You've got an Amiga box back there. I was I had an Amiga 500, and I was interested in ray tracing. Not that I understood all the math behind it, but I liked the idea. And over the last few years, I've seen a couple of attempts of people trying to do things in JavaScript, but this one just again, kind of came up. I saw it on Reddit about an hour ago. Real-time ray tracing in JavaScript, and there's a demo, and there's code here. Now, this article talks a little bit more, a blog post talks a little bit more about the algorithms and how he partitions up this binary space partitioning, how he decides what areas he'll focus on and he'll do calculations on and which ones will be. So there's some that are very small and some that are grouped together larger. And I think this probably isn't going to show very well here, but I can show a quick, where did it go? There. Oh, you can try the demo. So I'll see if this will come up and that you can watch. Yeah. If it looks blurry on your end, it's because it's blurry on my end. It is blurry, but as you move around, you can see it's, you know, the shading is decent and it's very fast. But this is almost Wolfenstein from 1991 or 92, whatever that was. but what's just really interesting about it is that it's all just pure JavaScript running in a browser. We'll see. There was a discussion about this on Reddit, a little bit of a discussion, and then a discussion on the guy's blog as well. There's some comments there, and people were suggesting do this to make it faster, do this to get more detail, and so on. So, you know, it was his first pass, and it was pretty, to me, even though it's blurry and chunky, it was the speed was still there. So,
very interesting. It's all done with, what is it? Is it rendering on a canvas? Is it,
I need to go look again. I was just more impressed with. Yeah, quickest way to use plot pixels is to use HTML canvas. I wrote my other algorithm. Yeah, it looks like at least that was his first Yeah, so this first one's just on Canvas. Now, a number of improvements that can be made, including using WebGL instead of Canvas, using web workers to parallelize some of the rendering, and so on. So he's got some ideas to make this smoother and faster still. But
yeah.
It was definitely an interesting first pass.
I guess when it moves on to WebGL, it will probably be assisted by the hardware. I mean, any GPU it may have on the machine. It can be much faster than it is now. But I think it's quite impressive. You can almost implement a Minecraft there.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe you can.
The other thing to think of is that was full screen or nearly full screen. You would get, I would assume that you would be able to get somewhat better resolution and speed if you were to scale that down some as well, too.
Yeah. But you have a fast machine right now, right?
2.2 gigahertz on an i7.
So i7 probably already runs 8 cores or something.
I've got a full 8 cores. You want to see all 8 of my cores? I can show you.
Nah. Sure. I don't think so. Not now.
Okay.
Oh, well. Well, anyway, we are getting closer to the end of this podcast. We're just moving on to one of the last sections on which we comment on the nominees of the Innovation Award. Well, this month is the first time on which we're going to comment on the winners of January. They were they published these classes in January, and they were nominated in February, on which they were voted, and now in March came out the results. And the winner is Jonathan Gauthier. He's got a couple of classes, but first, Michael, which ones would you like to comment?
I can't believe John Gotti got the first two places. That just seems made up to me.
He's Gotti.
Yeah.
Not a very good joke.
Yeah, I don't know how well that name actually travels outside the U.S., but...
No, it's French.
I know his name is French, but anyway... So I was just going to mention the GeoNames one first, and the jQuery, the audio plugin. But talk about whatever you'd like first.
No, go ahead. Just let's talk about. There are just five. We can talk all about those just very briefly, not because we are handing the podcast.
Well, the I think I'm sharing my screen here. This first one that came up. Let me move this over here. Can you see my screen okay?
I seen your background.
Oh, okay. There you go. So I'm sharing a screen, not a window. I thought I was sharing a window. Let me try it one more time. I just wanted to share the window. There we go. So this first one kind of caught my eye because the idea of dealing with geo information recently came up. I was not familiar with geo names specifically, but geo names... I don't know if they're .org or .com. I guess they're .org. Geonames.org, I think. A geographical database.
Yeah.
They have an API available. And where did this go? I've got all these up here. Yes, and Tom Schaefer has written a JavaScript client to deal with to making calls and pulling information back from there. And this is the whole file is pretty small, but he's mapping all of the API calls to the variable names and pull stuff back. And I think there were so demo of actually doing a web service call. Where was this? Actually, there's not that much at all here. I thought there was a little bit more here. Where was it? I was looking at something before. Well, actually, it's not going to be much here because it's just going to be calling the library. But as you can see here, there's not much code, and you'll be able to use that library, which itself is pretty small, to call the GeoNames API specifically. So it was interesting because I haven't seen that many JavaScript-based tools that give you access to any API stuff or geographic stuff outside of Bing Maps and Google Maps and stuff. And everybody really focuses on the maps, the visual maps, as opposed to the textual data that's available. So I thought this was pretty interesting.
Yeah, this one is That service is very old, but it's quite complete. It gets you information of countries, not just geographic information. I mean, it can get you even population and things. I remember having used that service before, even when there was no API. I had to scrape the page to extract some results. I do not recall exactly what was the purpose, but it's something related with countries. Well, I think it was to validate user groups for some reason. But I'm not using that anymore. Oh, I remember. It was when PHP classes had mirrors, and the mirroring thing would figure what would be the closest mirror to your country based on the coordinates. Well, anyway, they're no longer mirrors. It's no longer useful. But now it seems they evolved it and put it a proper API. And Tom Schaefer from Germany is submitted that class. It is, I think, it has may have several purposes beyond what Google Maps provides. Google Maps is not just maps; it provides also geocoding and some information that is not exactly visual. And I think it could be a good complement for maps-based applications. And other than that, which other class you'd like to mention?
Well, the other one to mention is where's the name of it? Oh, I got to go back one page. This is the HTML5 audio tag player. This is the actual source code to this from Pierre-Henri Soria. I hope I'm saying that right or close to right. It's very, very, very simple here. Yeah, it's just saying, hey, go either return me an audio tag, which is the modern way of embedding a reference to an MP3 file, or an embed tag.
It's some flash player.
Yeah. And audio with embed fallback is really what this is. The embed tag is in case necessary for IE7 and IE8, or maybe some other browsers. It's really not too much to this, but it's one of the winners, and it's functional, certainly.
Yeah,
it's very simple. Pull in, make sure you have jQuery, pull in your sound file, and then you can say, well, if you use the $ in jQuery, $.sound.play, and play it. And it will automatically add that tag, append it to the body, and do autoplay. So,
yeah, it's very simple, but it does something that, in the beginning when we start this innovation world, almost every package is innovative because it's compared to what exists in the site. So
yeah.
It's natural that some packages are very simple, although they do something that did not exist before. And on my part, I'll mention the other three, starting from the last one. Wait, let me try to screen share it right. Well, this one is dynamic button to scroll page top by Marplow. And this is basically also a very simple component that shows you a link at the bottom of the page if the page did not fit in the current viewport. I mean, if the page is taller than the length of your browser window, I mean, the height. And it's also very simple, but has its uses. And this one is from Marplow from Romania. I'm sure Marplow is a nickname, not exactly a real name. And the other two that I wanted to mention, they are both from Jonathan Gotti. I hope Jonathan can excuse us for not spelling his name in proper French. Jonathan has been a long-time contributor, not just of JS classes, but also from PHP classes. And this time he published two very interesting classes, objects, which would probably be more accurate to call it. One is a jQuery plugin to handle touch events in a way that work also with non-touch screens. So they would be emulated by mouse clicks. You could For instance, emulate a swipe with clicking on a window and drag the mouse to one of the sides, and that would be interpreted as a swipe. And if you have a touch screen, it will intercept the correct touch events, not the clicks and the mouse drags. And this one, it's one of the two that of Jonathan that were nominated. The other one is the winner, which is basically a very, well, I will not say simple, but probably simpler library that emulates jQuery, but with just some of the basic functionality, not all the what jQuery tries to implement nowadays. So it provides compatibility with jQuery and then also another library that attempts to do the same called Zepto. So Zepto emulates jQuery, so everybody trying to emulate jQuery and trying to be simple. So I think this is useful for when you want to minimize your code and do not want all the functionality. But it already, yeah. Despite it already includes quite a good chunk of the jQuery functionality.
If I was looking at Zepto minimized, gzipped is 9.7K, and this one, this basic compatibility library, is 7K or 7.3K. So even smaller than Zepto. For the people that really want something minimal, Zepto really, has been really kind of minimal. The go-to. But this is interesting that it's even, if it's actually really compatible and still even slightly smaller, more power to you. Great.
You save a few more K. And, well, with this, we conclude this section of the podcast and move on to one final section on which Michael comments on the upcoming topics of the JS Mag magazine.
Well, good morning. You know, I've never done this before, so I'm going to...
Right.
Hang on.
You've never done this before this month.
No. I mean, I've never done this. So what I'm going to do is, look at that. I'm actually going to share. This is last month's issue. It's not quite, it's April on Monday. I think we'll probably have our April issue out. Probably not on Monday, but probably soon after that, probably Tuesday or Wednesday, with the holiday weekend, trying to get everything wrapped up. It's a little tough, but we have... Janine Meyer has continually done a series for us on different techniques for doing animation and client-side interactions, and has another piece on that. We have potentially a piece on Modernizer, kind of a current view on the Modernizer library, possibly a piece looking at the Isotope jQuery plugin, and lastly, I'm just looking at the screen here, Mike Schwartz has for a long time contributed series on his Silk.js server-side library. He was continually writing. He wrote me last month and said that he had an idea for something, and it took a little bit longer for him to get. He was sick and got better, but he's got an article that he's contributed on doing Boolean algebra in JavaScript, and I'm not going to give away too much on this, but he was describing to me some of the tricks that he's been doing to get to do faster math on sets of information and bitwise operations and things, which for me and you, I mean, for I guess for me anyway, didn't necessarily sound like it would necessarily be useful day to day. However, probably about 2 days after he told me that, I was having lunch with a friend who was doing a lot of JavaScript stuff on an iPhone, or doing mobile Safari stuff, and I started thinking about this, and the speed with some of these some of the Boolean algebra stuff, the speed at which you can do stuff, and the reduced memory both make things faster in mobile devices, and I would imagine have a bit of an impact if you're doing a lot on battery life. So I'm not suggesting, hey, read this and you'll improve your battery a lot, but or that this is all completely brand new stuff. But it was kind of new to me. It was interesting. Certainly not a math geek by any stretch of the imagination. People that are math majors would look at this and say, psh, you know, I knew that 20 years ago, but I didn't. So
yeah, but what would be the use cases for Boolean algebra? Any specific applications or?
Let me try to pull up a draft so I can share something with you briefly, because my draft went away. There we go. Open this.
Murphy's Law.
Yeah. Well, you know, you had your power go out before, too.
Yeah. Always something happens when you think it won't.
Gosh.
I guess everybody needs to read the magazine.
Well, I'll point out one of the references here is to talking, actually mentioning that the Mozilla Developer Network has a page on Bitwise operators, suggesting why you should use them. So they can do operations on binary representations, but they'll end up returning standard JavaScript values. One of the benefits of that is going to be speed. That may be the primary one for some people. But from what I'm getting from this, there's an element of reduced memory usage as well, being able to store and operate on some data structures in a more efficient manner.
Yeah. Well, other than that, did you finish?
No, I'm finished. I finished a while ago, and then you kept asking questions. So.
No, I mean, if there were more topics on the magazine.
Oh, no.
Well, I think with that, we conclude this podcast. We cover quite a lot of interesting libraries and things that go on in JavaScript world. And with that on my part, it's all for now. Thank you, Michael, again for coming. Bye.
Bye-bye.